Yep.
Ready.
Mics are live.
Good afternoon. This is an informal hearing on case number PU-18-339. It is 1:31 p.m. on Tuesday, September 3rd, 2019. I'm Commissioner Brian Crocius, joined by Commissioner Julie Fedorchuk and Commissioner Randy Christman. I don't have any opening comments. Commissioner Fedorchuk?
I don't either.
Commissioner Christman?
I do not, thank you.
This is an informal hearing involving only undisputed facts. If there are any disputed facts, we will close the informal hearing and issue a notice of hearing. The applicant will go first in this type of proceeding, but before starting, we'll have staff and then followed by company representatives. If you could please introduce yourself for the record.
Jerry Leon with staff.
Adam Renfin with staff.
Okay, and then one other on the bridge line, correct? Or two others on the bridge line?
Ryan Long from Excel.
Okay.
And David Adams from Excel.
Okay, is there anyone else on the telephone? Okay, then Mr. Cedarquist.
Roland Salzer from Excel, project engineer.
Dave Cedarquist, regulatory affairs, Excel.
Dave Gadine, Wanza Construction.
Manuel Hiley, Project Manager, Excel.
Okay, thank you. Well, it's all yours.
All right, great. Thanks, Commissioners. And first of all, I just want to start by saying we really appreciate the prompt scheduling of this informal hearing. We fully anticipate and plan for an in-service date of October 1. So, again, just glad that you've scheduled this, and hopefully it we'll get some approvals this month. If everything works out, great, and be ready to go in October. As you can imagine, it's sort of a challenge to be looking out 25 years in the future and trying to determine costs for decommissioning a wind facility like this. We feel pretty confident in the plan that we've submitted here with you. It's a conservative and what we believe is a reasonable estimate of the cost of decommission. Dave Knine will talk to that a little bit later as well from Wanzek. This is the third wind facility that we've filed a decommissioning plan for since the new rules were put in place. We have sort of followed the same template with this plan for Foxtail, as you may have noticed, with the appropriate adjustments for the new rules. So what we thought we would do here is just start off with a brief overview of the project, just to provide a little more context, and then we'll have a discussion of the decommissioning plan and estimate itself. We'll talk a little bit about the guarantee, the financial assurance that we included in our filing, and then like to finish up with just a little bit of talking about how this decommissioning estimate will impact rates through the salvage percent that we include in our upcoming RER filings and ultimately base rates. So just finish with that, since we did include a little discussion about that in the decommissioning plan itself, so we'll run through that. But I think I'll hand it over to Emmanuel to talk a little bit about the project, first of all. Oh, I should mention that we got a great picture of Commissioner Fedorchuk at the Foxtail site. A couple of weeks ago, there was an event called American Wind Week, and she did a blade signing with Lieutenant Governor Sanford, and Teresa Mogensen's the other gal there, our Executive Vice President of Energy Supply. So anyway, really appreciated having a commissioner there to speak to the audience that was there, and it was a great day. So go ahead, Amen.
All right, so just want to talk a little bit about project status currently. So we just have an image here of a crane stacking the mid on top of the base section out at site. So the project's 20,000-acre site in Dickey County. Many of you already know that, but we have 75 turbines. They're all 2.0 megawatt turbines, so just ignore the 2.3 there. That one just carried over. But we're planning for 150 to 200 construction jobs. We've kind of hit that peak at this point, so we've been pretty close to being just over that 200 number, and we're anticipating having about 8 full-time employees out on site once project's completed and we start operating out of the operation and maintenance building. Current estimates are showing $30 million in landowner payments and $20 million in property taxes to local government.
Over what time frame?
The life of the project.
25 years?
Yep.
Sorry.
That was my question.
That's a good question. Turbine offload's been completed. So basically what that just means is as of last week, we had all the turbine, you know, traffic ended at the site. So all the turbines have arrived on site and they've been placed at their location and they're waiting to be erected now. So part of that is 41 of the 75 turbines have been fully erected. So they're completely up. The blades have been stabbed into the nacelle. So those are completely erected now. And we have an additional 21 base midsections that are stacked similar to the image you're seeing there. So a top-off crane will come behind those 21 that are currently erected and finish the erection cycle there. So that's where we're at as far as erection goes. And then energization. So we have one of our feeders for collection circuits completed, and now the turbines that have been fully erected on that circuit can actually start producing energy. So our supplier is currently starting to commission those turbines and starting to bring energy onto the grid now.
The 8 full-time employees, I've asked this before, but I don't remember the answer. Are they dedicated just to this facility, or do they work multiple facilities?
Yeah, they're actually just dedicated to that facility itself. Yep. There may be times where one of them may go to another project, but for the most part, they're just fully dedicated there and they'd just be filling in temporarily if they go somewhere else. So. All right, and then as far as the in-service date goes, we're targeting October 1st, as Dave mentioned earlier.
Can you talk just a tiny bit about the adding of the blades to the turbine? Like, is that a crane?
Yeah, it's actually the top-off crane actually installs that. The blades. So we pick them individually, and those three blades, first we'll erect the base midsections with our, we have two crane packages out on site. Wanzek constructs the project, and that base mid crane will actually erect just the base and mid tower components. And then this top off crane will come from behind it, and it's a taller crane. It has higher capacity, so it'll stack the last top off section of the tower, and then it'll bring the nacelle and the hub, the generator, mm-hmm. install that, and then the blades will get picked last, and each of them will end up getting stabbed into the hub section of the generator. And then those all get installed, and they get rotated, and then the next blade comes in, and they finish out.
Or how are they connected?
They're bolted on. Yep.
They're studs. Blade studs stick through, and then they're bolted on the backside. And then the studs are tensioned.
I don't know why I've never really thought about that piece of it, but if it's windy, you can't do this, can you?
No,
it's pretty limited.
They have limitations on wind speed that they can operate at. So that's part of where, you know, we've had a few delays just due to weather impacts. So they can only operate during certain periods of time.
And I can add to that relative to that. Every manufacturer is somewhat different, but Vestas specifically does single blade erection. Because of the design of their blades, whereas a lot of turbines, you've seen all three go up simultaneously. I'm sure you've seen pictures of that, where the full rotor is assembled.
I mean, they're connected already?
And they're connected on the ground and lifted as one unit, which actually, because of the single blade, you're adding additional picks to the main crane, so therefore you're more susceptible to wind. You can go at a little higher speed because of the single blade, but versus a full rotor pick, but you're more susceptible because you have two more picks that you have to do.
So from a time crunch perspective, but
what's the threshold? Is it 10 mile an hour winds?
No, it's low 20s.
Low 20s. Oh.
Yeah.
some skilled operators.
Wow.
Yep.
Are those blades, they're the longest pieces? They're longer than those, the center sections?
Yes.
So,
I've seen them in the road.
Yeah.
Driving by them, they seem to go for forever on the interstate.
They're pretty long pieces, and this is just a few images from the railhead that we use. So kind of a interesting fact is we use the same railhead to deliver all these components to the site by train that we did for Courtney Wind Farm. Yeah. So that kind of helped to lessen the potential impacts to, you know, other areas, right? So we don't have to develop another railhead. And also helped with our supplier Vestas from a perspective of cost to limiting the cost impact there. So there was a benefit there.
Where's that at?
That's in Pingree. So it's just north northwest of Jamestown. Yeah.
So then and you haul them on.
Yep, you haul them. It's still a pretty long haul for that location, but overall it was beneficial for the project. So.
Before you get into the dismantling, you mentioned the activity you had down there where Julie spoke. So the ones that are erected now, I presume, have the lights operational, so a plane doesn't hit them in the meantime, right?
Yeah, they have temporary FAA lights on right now, 100%, until the site's fully erected.
And so those are going all the time?
Yes.
Okay, but everything is approved, and so when you become operational, they are going to be the radar-controlled ones, or is that still pending something else?
Currently, the plan is we'll be able to get everything in on time. We're just waiting on a little bit of a delay that's happened on fabrication for the radar tower, but currently, I mean, we're expecting that to still hit before the end of the month, so...
One radar tower is able to cover it?
Yes, just one. So that was a part of our what we try to do to reduce some of the cost impact there is going to a system that could just use one tower.
Okay. Thank you.
So we're going to have Dave Canine talk about the decommissioning plan that was submitted. But I do need to point out that in the discussion document that we had in the filing, we refer to the foundations being removed to 3 feet. That was the old rule. The new rule is 4 feet. That's pretty much a typo in this discussion. The estimates and the work that Dave did does contemplate a 4-foot removal. So I just wanted to make that clear. But Dave, you want to talk a little bit about?
Yeah, certainly. So in the decommissioning plan, basically the first thing we'd do, we'd come in and do a little preliminary civil work, because if you're bringing in large cranes, you still need a crane pad, so we would have to do some preliminary civil work, you know, just to be able to get the big equipment back in and be able to utilize it safely, at which point we would start the tower deconstruction would actually be the first thing we would contemplate. We'd start that, the dewiring, and then the disassembly process. And then we would start do the downsizing, which is basically cutting the pieces up into smaller, more manageable pieces to be loaded on legal loads to allow for so the transportation cost is not as excessive. At which point we would start once that is complete, there'll be simultaneously some electrical deconstruction going on as well, junction box removal, that kind of thing, remediation along the collection system line. And we would then, following obviously the removal of the towers, we would start the removal of the foundation pedestals down to the 4-foot level. And basically all this stuff would occur kind of in an assembly line process as you go through the farm. And we'd finish up later on as we get moved toward the end is when we'd do the removal of the O&M building, the operations and maintenance building, and the substation. It'd be basically occur simultaneously with everything else.
Is the topsoil just banked around each individual turbine, or is it stockpiled in multiple locations throughout the site?
We'll reclaim as we go.
But where is the topsoil stored in the meantime?
You mean currently? After construction's completed.
Right.
Yeah, they just regrade the site, so
it's blended in.
Yeah, you keep the topsoil where it's located because we don't want to remove it from the farmer's land or, you know, any of that. We want to keep that local resource where it is.
So the roads, that's just pushed to the side.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is once this removal happens, you'd be able to re-level and bring that topsoil back to where it used to be, right?
The pedestal itself isn't.
We actually did include some costs for import just because
sometimes
reclamation is, bringing it all back in is really good in theory.
Mm-hmm.
But if you create a swale where the road was at one time, then you've created an issue for the farmer or the, et cetera. So we've assumed that we would have to do some import on that as well, just to help with that.
Yeah, good.
It's part of the reclamation process.
Good.
So you see the baseline was at 20.8 million. We had estimated salvage of 4.2, and then we have a couple different alternative scenarios. One scenario contemplated, again, basically the same similar deconstruction method. However, it was including transportation to either a specialized facility or perhaps a holding yard so that for reuse, because they're theoretically at the end of their useful life. However, there are facilities that do refurbish. So it's potential we could sell the turbines at the end of for reuse. So that there's a lot of that coming in right now. There are certain facilities who are doing that. And they're refurbishing much older, smaller turbines of less than a megawatt size at this current time. But at that time, it would likely they would take these larger turbines. And then option C is actually to tip over the turbines, cut them up, and send them out. Scrap them.
How do you tip them over?
Torches.
Like cutting a tree, you just whittle away at the bottom.
Gosh, and then kind of push it over. I've seen videos where you have a backhoe assisting with actually the bucket underneath the foundation to help it tip over in the correct direction, which does not seem safe. I would not want to be the operator in that, but
no, and that's not something we would do. That's the other part of this is that being we are, large, legitimate construction company, obviously we would treat this like one of our current new projects. We're not going to treat it like there are certain guys a little more fly by night. We're going to do it our normal way.
So is option C one that you actually would do?
We would do it. We would subcontract the tip over. We have done it one time on a small project with very, very small turbines, and it worked, but it's interesting.
More of a dramatic process.
Yeah, it's interesting to watch.
Then you have to fix the crater that it creates in the
ground. Yeah, and you have to dig everything out of the ground that gets stabbed into the ground. I mean, obviously those blades in the fiberglass would tend to disintegrate on impact.
It's just be a terrible mess.
Can be a mess, but it's the guys who do it, they do a great job.
And it's cheaper.
It is cheaper. Because you don't have to bring in the big crane. That's the biggest thing, and you're not disassembling. You're not putting all the man hours in taking it apart nicely. So you're literally just laying it over.
Fluids are drained first and
The fluids are drained and sent to the proper facilities.
How much fluids are in one of these? Of various, I don't need to know each thing separate, whatever's all in there, but are we talking?
I don't have the number off the top of my head there, but I we can look into it and bring that one back, so.
It's not important for this decision.
Yeah.
I'm just curious.
Yeah. No.
Unless you know from putting them up.
I don't. No.
One of the, Dave and his team provided these options partly because of the discussions we had with Adam looking at our Courtney and Borderwinds decommissioning plans and then other plans that have been submitted. It's a little bit all over the map in terms of the way that different estimates came in, so we just tried to provide a little bit of optionality with respect to the removal and the deconstruction part of it. So that's why this plan, unlike the other two plans, had a couple more options in there just to see if commission had a preference one way or another, but.
From my perspective, I guess I don't. But again, we don't, we might down the road once we have some experience with these. I don't know that we would need to commit to one of those options now. Because, I mean, we've never even been involved in a reclamation of a site yet. So I guess I'm glad to see the options and to know that those there's some other methods for doing it.
Sure.
Yes, I would withhold judgment until closer to the time when there was going to be an actual project and say, like, settle on the plans then.
Sure. Courtney, would you mind just giving the commission a brief overview of the study that is being done next year as a result of the Minnesota Commission's actions?
Yes, absolutely. So the Minnesota Commission, starting in about the year 2000, I believe, requires us to provide a full dismantling study for our production plants to show, you know, how on track we're looking and to help to set up the net salvage rates for the next five-year period. And that is coming up to be filed in mid-February 2020. We're starting our study now. We hire a third-party TLG services in order to, and they're a subject matter expert in dismantling studies. In particular, they do our nuclear plant, but they this is outside of the nuclear filing, so these are all the other non-nuclear production facilities that are in NSP Minnesota territory. So the last time this was filed was in early 2015, and at that point we only had Nobles and Grand Meadow wind farms in service, so those two farms were included in the study. But since then we've basically been using kind of a composite rate, averaging those two farms to set up the net salvage rate for all of our subsequent farms. But in the 2020 study, then, they will have Border, Courtney Wind, and probably then some of these, like Foxtail, that are going in service this year. So that'll help us provide a little bit more, you know, another data point in addition to what WANSIC's prepared. And then once more of these are filed kind of around the country, we'll help to see what is happening within the industry and what people are forecasting to see a little bit more, just have more data points to say what is reasonable within the industry.
And, of course, as we go through our discussion here, we don't take into account salvage value when we get to the end number, of course.
Yeah, we're providing the salvage information for purposes of that salvage percent, which then feeds into the revenue requirements in a rate case or a renewable energy rider. So that's how that all fits in, and we'll talk about that in a couple minutes here too. But
okay, fair enough.
Yeah, and I just kind of wanted to weigh in on that, too. I wouldn't say never, but I can't imagine myself having a willingness to put consideration into our potential value of the salvage value as far as if we ever inherit one of these to clean up. I don't want to see this agency be in the salvage business. Mm. At that point in time, I could imagine all kinds of troubles over, is there some lender that feels they have a lien on that salvage value at that point? And, you know, whether it's Xcel or all the other companies we're working on with these, that's why, in my opinion, I think we should just stay out of the salvage value part of it and just look at the gross costs.
Okay.
Be prepared for the worst.
Under that scenario, that would involve collecting more on the front end from ratepayers. Yep. And those are the comparisons you've offered with and without.
Well, no, we've calculated a salvage percent using, you know, using the estimated salvage of the scrap. So in the effort to try to be as, you know, accurate and fair as possible when we start recovering the costs, mm-hmm. because if it's reasonable to believe that you're going to have some salvage for at least the scrap, you know, you can include that into your rate and hold down the costs right. a little bit. So if we exclude that salvage, then we're going to have a higher revenue requirement, a higher rate.
We can't look at it right now the way the rules are currently set up, regardless of how we feel about it.
We can for rate-making purposes.
Yeah.
This is just for the decommissioning plan. We can, but when we get into the rate-making purposes, we can. And I would say I would reserve the right to differ from what we are looking at from a decommissioning plan standpoint when it comes to actually charging customers, because I agree that there will be a salvage value that will be used, and we should do our best to consider that so we don't overcharge people. But
I agree. I can easily see the potential for a different accounting method for between the rate making part of this as opposed to the financial assurances for decommissioning. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So with that in mind, maybe this slide won't work well with you, but this is the rule with respect to the financial assurance that, you know, the owner shall provide financial assurance acceptable to the commission. What we've done here is put forth a guarantee for the $16.6 million, which is the gross cost of decommissioning less the anticipated scrap value, $20.9 million less the $4.3 million. So that's what we've got in the financial assurance that was part of the filing. And then just lastly, just touching on this net salvage percent, you know, what we're trying to do is calculate a salvage percent that relates only to the production assets that are there. There are substation transmission assets which are dealt with separately in terms of salvage. So when we look at the production assets and we look at our decommissioning study, we'll look at the cost to remove or decommission and the potential for salvage proceeds, and we net them together. If the decommissioning costs are more than the salvage, you're going to have a negative salvage percent. And so if we took an example, a simple one, we have a $100 million asset and it costs $5 million more to remove it than the salvage proceeds, you're going to have a 5%, negative 5% salvage percent. So that's kind of what we have going on with a wind facility like this. Our decommissioning costs in this Foxtail example, far outweigh the salvage. So we have a negative net salvage percentage of 6.4% of the asset. So what that would mean then is when we calculate our revenue requirements for our renewable energy rider later on this fall and file it for 2020 revenue requirements, this negative percent salvage becomes part of the depreciation of that facility. And then, of course, ultimately, and if there's a rate case in the future, the RER gets zeroed out and that would move to base rate. So we've included this information in the decommissioning plan. It's not something that's really required, but it does feed right into that calculation. So go back a slide. Whoops.
Pat, you should grab a mic.
And identify yourself real quickly too.
The financial assurance that you're planning on is it 20 million or is it or 21 million or is it 17 million?
It's the 16.6 million.
So, and I think that's what we were talking about just a little bit earlier, is that for financial assurance for decommissioning, we're talking about the full amount.
Okay.
And so my understanding is the commission would want to see $21 million in financial assurance.
And Pat, can you identify yourself for the record?
Oh, Patrick Fawn. commission staff.
Thanks, Pat.
So that's what we have for today, unless there are more questions from commissioner staff.
So 244 would be more in the neighborhood of 320-ish without the salvage.
The 244 represents the production assets that'll be placed into service on October 1.
Mm-hmm.
And so that on that slide, if that's what you're referring to, we're just dividing that net negative net salvage amount by that investment to come up with the percent. So instead of recovering 100% of the asset through depreciation, we'll be recovering 106% basically to recover that removal piece, that decommissioning cost.
When you account for that, do you account for it as a decommissioning cost, or is it this net salvage rate?
It's part of the net salvage rate. That's correct, Courtney?
Yeah, so for GAAP purposes, it's recorded as a regulatory liability, and for FERC purposes, it's recorded in 108 accumulated depreciation.
Okay, but it's called net salvage rate. It isn't called decommissioning cost. Right?
Right, yeah, because it includes the decommissioning plus the salvage. So that's where you get the net salvage part of it.
And I did find, actually, the number 244 isn't right. 278,583 per turbine.
Oh.
Is the...
The per turbine cost.
Per turbine cost to decommission. That's the conservative estimate, worst case. Tipping them over would be...
cheap.
So what's the end result is exactly the same whether you tip them over in terms of how the land looks at the end of all of it? Theoretically. Okay. You're confident in... I'm thinking from a landowner perspective that... they left for however long it took and came back, and you did half one way, half the other way, they wouldn't be able to tell the difference. What is the time frame? How long would it take to decommission a facility? Four per week. Okay. And are these, is that generally speaking... different facilities have different turbines, blades, et cetera, but do you think that would change from one facility to the other, or is it about the same regardless?
Being we're only utilizing one crane, I would assume it would be very similar in that respect. Mm-hmm. You know, depending on overall turbine heights and quantity of components. There are certain larger turbines that have more tower sections and that kind of thing, but it's going to be somewhat limited in the variance. And if you're doing the tip, then it's
and that's
pretty
one,
straightforward.
One crane
yes.
on site, and I suppose bringing a second crane, and then you have to double the haul away capacity, and
mm-hmm.
probably isn't feasible at that point.
You're going to bring basically... you'll gain additional mobilization and setup costs for the cranes themselves and running costs.
Right.
And then you'll shorten your schedule, but you'll shorten your schedule. It won't likely be enough to offset the additional cost of the additional crane. Mm-hmm. So.
And where will these blades go? To be determined?
TBD.
Do you foresee any problems... in terms of the requirements, instead of just putting them in a landfill and burying them, because I think that's essentially what happens now. I think over in Germany, I think they're looking at, I read an article, they're looking at recycling them as a fuel source.
Yeah, I haven't heard of that one.
Which I think is interesting because you would think the emissions would be pretty nasty.
I believe with plastics, if you burn it hot enough.
The emissions, like the NOx and all of that, is not as much of a problem. I mean, I'm not an expert, but yeah, I think I've done some reading on that for other things. That's not something that we're considering is the end use of it.
And as things stand today, they can go to a landfill, but I wouldn't bet on that. 10 years from now, for example, that they can just go to a landfill and be buried. That really surprises me, because don't you have to sort your waste? And this is in Minnesota, but...
Mm-hmm. It's the problem with the decommissioning plans, it's theoretical at this point. We're so far out in the future.
Yeah, right. No, it's a work in progress. It'll evolve and change over time, I'm sure. Nuances, if you will, and some smaller and some maybe more significant, but we'll cross those bridges as we get to them.
Got it. So I don't know which project it's from, but one of our wind farms in Minnesota had some weather damage to a turbine, or maybe it was a couple turbines, and we were trying to haul the turbine blades themselves to a landfill in South Dakota, and we were informed that landfill will no longer be accepting the blades just due to the volume. It's just a lot of material.
Right. No, it's...
Then if you imagine a whole wind farm, it really becomes a large amount.
Yeah. Right. No, I don't think there's any... Well, and some of the blades currently are being replaced on different facilities. And I think it'll come to a head sooner versus later in terms of more specific requirements and what you can or how you have to deal with it. And then that would impact decommissioning costs potentially as well.
Yeah, we tried to reach out to Vestas. So I called somebody that we have as a contact of Vestas, and they're unaware of any recycling programs for either the fiberglass or the carbon fiber blades. There's just no recycling at this time of the blades.
Yeah, but I think the carbon fiber is even more challenging in terms of right now there is no clear path forward on what do you do with the carbon fiber versus the fiberglass, from what I understand.
Yep. Yeah, that's basically the impression I got from them, yes.
So how do you estimate in a decommissioning cost what you're going to do with those blades and how much it's going to cost to do?
Basically, you assume, in this case, a $60 ton tipping fees. Because we did talk to the landfill in, I believe it was Jamestown. And he said, we don't accept that now, but in 20 years, we probably will. So,
cut them down? Do you break them up?
We would break them down. We would not haul them fully assembled. Unless we were, like, in that initial second scenario I talked about, in which case you were selling them for a reuse purpose, in which case you would haul them fully, because you would take them down nicely and
when Dave's
can send them out the way.
When Dave's referring to a tipping fee, it's not the tipping of the...
Right.
Yeah.
Just to make that clear.
That's the landfill cost.
Yes.
Well, we'll just have to continue to monitor that and see what happens down the road. It's not as clear-cut as metal components that are essentially scrap metal and... I don't know where it's going.
That's part of why I don't want to be in the business of that. I just
salvaging
want
terms.
To know with the cost of getting these things down and out.
Well, I'm assuming I'm sorry.
So we got really three things to discuss, and we've discussed two. The decommissioning plan, the financial assurance, which isn't what I was hoping to hear, but I guess that's to be ironed out. But then there's also the guarantee. And you mentioned on page 5 of this filing that came in August 27th, The guarantee providing the financial assurance that we believe will be acceptable to the commission. And I could not sit here and repeat to you the legal distinctions, but in a previous case, they felt they had a guarantee, and our staff and legal have had dialogue with that particular company, and now they're making a change on that in order to meet the requirements of our rule. And so I don't know, do we have the exact wording of how you're planning on doing that guarantee? Because I don't want you to run into the same roadblock, or, I mean, have you discussed that with staff that we can be comfortable that you are providing the kind of guarantee that we are needing?
Ryan or Adam, do you guys want to address that question with respect to the guarantee?
This is Ryan. Commissioner, so just to be clear, the guarantee is actually attached as Attachment B to our filing, so it's referenced on page 5, and then the language itself and the executed guarantee is attached as Attachment B. I am not sure, Dave, whether we have discussed the details of this guarantee language with staff. I wasn't aware of the issues with the other developer related to some language in their guarantee, and so we're obviously happy to work with staff to make sure that this is meeting the commission's needs.
Well, I guess it's just something I'll point out now, and maybe staff needs a little time to work on it and have legal look at it or something, but there is precise language needed there, and so I'm assuming that we'll ultimately get it right here before we approve it.
Yeah, we're happy to cooperate with that.
Randy, are you talking specifically about the length of the term for the guarantee?
I mean, no.
That was one of the big issues previously, and there's a termination date included in this one.
It's not the termination date. It's, and I don't know if anybody's working on the other case I referenced. I can't even repeat the there was some legal distinction, and they're redoing that one.
And that with the health department one? That where they showed the where they had the.
Well, that was part of how they were getting to it. But I mean, it's more than just saying like, well, we guarantee it. There's legal things that need to be made.
Should we have Jack in here so there's some clarity? Because I'm kind of confused what you're referencing. So,
if he's available, I don't mind.
He's probably listening in.
He's always spying on us.
Pat went to get him, but we probably should have just waited to see if he was being diligent in his duties.
Well, he had somebody in his office before this when I was going to ask him about this. But I don't think it's a huge deal. Yeah. We just have to make sure it gets right.
Right, and right.
Adam, you
say in the meantime, do you assume in your base case that's more conservative, the $278,000 per wind turbine generator? Do you assume, how many miles do you assume the scrapyard is? Is that still 600 miles? Just like
base case?
Yeah, the local.
So the middle of the road price.
The option A, the first one.
Yeah, the first one. The dismantled, downsized, and scrap.
Yeah, that's within like the Jamestown radius.
Oh, okay.
That's what that is, and then the delta is the going up to the next level. It would be the 600 mile radius.
Okay.
So, Jack, were you listening?
I was listening.
Okay. So, can you translate for us?
Sorry, I'm not sure exactly what the question was.
Well, can you two of them. There's probably two.
My question is this: in a different guarantee case, we're having the company change some language, so it really is the type of guarantee that we're looking for and under our rules and feels enforceable.
Sure.
I don't know exactly which is the language to be watching, but in this case, and I didn't catch it in here, but attachment B of this filing that was done in late August apparently has the guarantee that Excel is planning, and I'm just wondering if that meets the legal standards that we're looking for, or if, like that previous case, we need to do some work on that part of it.
Sure.
And Jack, can you identify yourself for the record, please?
John Hsu with the North Dakota Public Service Commission. Commissioner, I do recall that we received this. However, I don't think we've actually had legal review on this. I know we were kind of in an interim period before Brian started. Mm-hmm. I had looked at a previous version that they provided, but that was a bit ago, and I'm not sure if it was this case. I'd be happy to review it, of course, over the next week or so and give you some sort of feedback on that, though.
I think that'd be very helpful, and especially communicating with staff and communicate with the company and
sure,
make sure we get it correct.
Absolutely.
At the same time, Jack, if you could look at the termination clause that's included in this one and make sure that that's consistent with what we've agreed to in the past. And you don't have to do it now.
Sure.
You could communicate with the company on that one as well.
I know it's not like the other one we had. Mm-hmm. However, that doesn't necessarily mean that that shouldn't be acceptable to you as well. I mean, there are differently situated organizations, and but I would be happy to go and review this and have discussions with the company and provide you some sort of feedback and my thoughts on that as well.
Perfect.
Later date.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Just for the clarity and the record, Dave, had we started already, or did you just mention that the 36 inches of foundation removal that was mentioned on page 2 is a typo, and it's really 48, like is mentioned on page 3, is that correct?
Right. Wanzek's estimates include a 4-foot depth, not okay. 3. Again, we used a template, and that's a piece that we missed when we did that.
Okay. Any other questions?
I don't have any others.
Staff? Any other comments from the company?
I've got maybe one. Could you maybe explain a little bit about what you plan on doing with the access roads?
Or as?
I understand that you're crushing them up and you're putting them on other roads at the site, so you're not hauling anything away.
But you're going to reclaim the material itself and then put it back on the roads, public roads, typically, and then remove the fabric and stockpile it, essentially, is what we've got going on.
I would say just from a quick look at that, we will need to do some work on that. It isn't acceptable in the format that it is for... Not even for the purposes of the guarantee, but also for what we're legally able to accept as a state of North Dakota agency.
Okay.
I'll work with the company on that.
Thanks. Well, I'll close. Did you have something else?
Is this the first one that we've done with Excel? I mean, there must be one for Courtney.
We provided a guarantee, a construction guarantee, before we started to build the project. Different amount, but okay. Basically the same.
Same language. What about Courtney? Was that under the previous rules? Okay.
Yep.
So this is the first one with the guarantee prior to operation. Okay. So, yeah, we'll work through the specifics.
Sure.
Okay.
I don't have anything else, Rand. Brian.
Okay. I'm a little gun shy.
It was just one more thing. No.
Well, I will say, I really appreciate the level of detail that's been provided on the pricing to dismantle and scrap. I think this is done very well and is easy to follow. So I really just wanted to say that that is greatly appreciated. So, and we've got a few details to iron out and a few questions, but okay. Seeing no other comments or questions, the PowerPoint, was that provided in a hard copy as well?
No, and I apologize for that, commissioners. With the Labor Day weekend and stuff, we just didn't get the thing finalized, but certainly provide a
right
copies.
Okay. Well, then we will consider the presentation in hard copy format as we receive it as as part of the evidence, as well as the audio recording. Jack, is that fine to do it that way? Okay. Is there any objection to this evidence becoming part of the official record upon which a decision will be reached?
No.
No.
Then the evidence as presented will now become a part of the official record upon which a decision will be reached. Are there any other matters for the record? Seeing none, this informal hearing is now closed. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you. So you were kind of in charge of the deal.
Well, I think-